Hello and welcome to Integrated Rhythm, two swing dancing besties, that's Chisomo Soleimani and myself, Bobby White, exploring race and other important topics in swing dancing and jazz dancing and jazz music. This is a follow-up episode to an episode we did a couple episodes ago called The Gig, where we talk about this crazy gig. So this is a follow-up reaction episode to that. We want to thank our Patreon patrons so much for all of your help and others who have contributed monetarily to help us keep the lights on. Anyway, we hope you enjoy it. Here we go.
Integrated Rhythm with Chisomo and Bobby.
Hello, everyone. I am Chisomo. And this is my co-host, Bobby. Surprise. And we have with us two very special guests, one of which is part of the Integrated Rhythm family, part of the production team. Her name is Laurel Ryan.
And we have a very special guest. You'll never guess who. Anthony Chen.
Hello.
We are Integrated Rhythm, two swing dancing besties. That's Chisomo Soleimani and myself, Bobby White, navigating race and exploring race and other topics in the swing dance scene. And yeah, so we are a podcast. You can find us on all the major podcasting networks. And if you don't find us on the podcasting networks, you can go to YouTube, where we have almost all of our episodes on YouTube, because we also screen record the conversations because they almost always take place over Zoom. We record them, and that's also pretty lovely if you have the time and energy to watch the conversations, because we say so much with our body language when we talk. So it can be a lot of fun to go and check us out on YouTube. And so, Chisomo, what is tonight's topic?
Tonight's topic is dance is healing. And so we find ourselves in a time of a pandemic. And according to Brené Brown, we've been battling two pandemics, one associated with COVID-19 and another one associated with considerations associated with race, right? And so as we're here today and here this week, we get the opportunity to connect, and we have these wonderful experiences that may actually be healing, especially after isolation. So we wanted to talk a little bit about that. So we are also going to, since all of you are our guests, we are going to also ask you all some questions.
This is very exciting for us. This is our first live episode recording. So thank you so much for being a part of this.
And thank you, Orly and Tony, for inviting us to be here. Yeah. All right. Our first question is, when was a time that you experienced healing through dance? And so we're going to ask our special guests and our hosts first, and then we'll turn it over to you and ask a couple of you the same question.
I can think of a particular moment in my life when I found swing dancing, and I felt incredibly isolated, and I was looking for community. And so, of course, there's community in swing dancing, but I found just in the dance itself, the ability to be expressive and playful and silly. And for once, I wasn't like the weirdest one in the room, which was a fairly new experience. I felt that's falling in love with Lindy Hop had a lot to do with both the community and the nature of the dance. I don't think it would have happened if I had attempted another partner, or when I attempted other partner dances, just because the community and the dance are so integrated, like rhythm.
Thank you, Laurel.
I feel like for me, healing also can be just like personal growth, right? So not necessarily that something was broken, but that, I mean, so I grew up like a tiny, skinny Asian kid, and in a largely majority white population. I grew up in Albuquerque, New Mexico. There's some Hispanic population there too, but as such, I was always like picked on. And then I found swing dancing when I was in 10th grade. And then I just really fell in love with it. It was something that I felt like I could be really good at. And then I would have friends that would come with me, and then I would teach them on the dance floor, because as we all know, we're not supposed to do that. But you know, these are our little group of high school kids, and then we'd teach each other like how to do aerials. You're also not supposed to do that. But then that kind of grew into having more confidence as a kid. And so it's something that's hard to come by, especially when you grow up getting picked on. And I feel like it's funny because I haven't talked about this a whole lot until recently. Like, my mom didn't know that I've been picked on as a kid until like this past year. And then on Mother's Day, my brother and my sister and I got together on a Zoom call with my mom. And then we all just started sharing stories about how we were picked on as kids. And she's like, oh, we had no idea. And we're like, it's because we never told you, Mom. We didn't want you to worry. And so I think going from that kind of low to being able to teach and be looked upon as a mentor, I think was really helpful for confidence and growth. And I think I'm a different person because I came upon swing dancing as a kid. Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Laurel's story really resonated with me in the sense that I had a lot of energy and I was into creativity and stuff, and I didn't have... I had tried various sports and I enjoyed sports, but sports didn't necessarily enjoy me being on. I had a lot of friends who were like, I really like you, Bobby, but you should not be on our team. Do not. It's fine. But part of that is because, as something we might talk about a little bit later, is I had ADHD and have ADHD. And so I'm the kid who gets distracted, and you don't want the person on your team to be distracted all the time. But as soon as I found swing dancing, I found a creative outlet. I found a place where I could just wallow in my love of good music. And I found a place where other people there were very similar to me in those regards. And something I've realized more and more over the years, something that we'll probably talk about a little bit more, and as we talk about all the time on our show, is being a white kid who grew up in the South, I didn't realize how many of the things about Lindy Hop and the swing dances, all the swing dances that I loved, were part of its blackness. Like its creativity, its community, the way that you share with each other and grow, and the way that there's no rules, there's guidelines, that kind of thing, like all sorts of things. And so those things really healed. Those things really just gave me so many great outlets for who I was as a kid.
So most of you here know I was born in Zambia. And being a small one in the United States, my family navigated the struggles of being an immigrant. And I love to dance. I love to move. The first time my mom remembers me moving was to Baby Love when I was 2 years old, just bouncing. Like every time the song Baby Love came on, I was like, Baby Love. And so as I grew up, I just loved to move and dance. And since dance is part of our culture, even though we were here, I followed my mom. She danced, I danced, but I wanted to take formal lessons, and I never got the chance to do that. As I came to Lindy Hop in college and then went back to Zambia in my early 20s, I got involved with these dance troupes. And through that, I was able to express this thing that I thought I could only do on a concert stage if I'd been classically trained. And I started to realize that this thing that was part of me that made me whole was something I could inhabit and then also share. Because like I didn't know that what I had was a gift that I could share until a lot later in my life. So for me, it's been similar to Anthony, where dance has empowered me to be more of me, especially social dance. All right, so now we want to hear from you. And so we're going to ask you to respond to that question. When is the time that dance has been healing for you? And we're also going to ask you to keep it a little bit brief.
Got yeah, so for you. You can raise a hand if you have something you'd love to share. Yeah,
yes. Taryn. Also, there is an integrated rhythm episode with just Taryn. Just want to throw that out there. And it's coming out.
Okay, so for me, dance has been healing because my parents couldn't afford for me to have lessons, and it was always something natural that I was able to do. And at a certain point, I got sad. Does anybody remember the show Fame? Yes. I wanted to live at that school, and that was just my entire life. And I always imagined that's how my life would be, formal dance training. Someone said institutional dance training. And at a certain point, I realized that was never going to be my life. And I grew up and got married and had kids. And then I got involved in ballroom dancing. I competed in ballroom dancing. And I got involved in musical theater, where I ended up becoming a choreographer for main stage shows because it was in there, you know, and I'd have these visions. So dance for me was healing, is something that I never thought that I would have or do. And it also gave me a singing career. Dance has made my dreams come true. Dance has given me some of my closest friends and given me the best times in my life and the other things to stem from that.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, feel free to clap.
We'll come over there just a second.
Oh, I'll go next. So, should I keep it on the mask? Okay. This is a funny contrast to what you just said, Taryn, because my life was education through dance since I was like 3. Like, just so all of my schools from like 4th grade on, it was like math, science, history, and then like ballet, modern. Like, it was just part of my curriculum. So it was like, that's how I grew up, like with dance in my schooling. But I think doing Lindy Hop was like my first time doing like a social dance, where it was just like I had like freedom to have a personality, and it wasn't just like, these are the steps and this is how to do them. This, like, anything outside of that is wrong. So get it like this, and then you're going to perform that for your family and you're going to look great. Because that was, you know, ballet and modern and all of the other styles. So it was like interesting to have something where it was like, okay, you can throw in boogie back and throw in the Dougie and then boogie forward and Shorty George and then start crumping with your friend. Just something really fun. And yeah, that kind of said who I was. There wasn't that room in the other styles. And then the timing of it was also perfect because I was like beginning to experience some social anxiety and depression. And in high school, just from feeling like you had to, like, there was expectation set for who I was, like my humor and who I was. So I felt like I always had to hit that mark of what people thought of me as. If I was lower, it was like, like I failed today because I was like below that. Or that wasn't, I didn't reach maximum potential of, you're hilarious. So I also just helped get that out of my brain. And yeah, the timing of it was good. Yeah, made like a second family. Like, Julia's like my other mother, Sam's like my brother. Yeah, it was very good timing and a nice break from the institutional dancing I'd been doing.
Thank you, Brandon. We have some hands over here.
May I ask that people say their names?
That is a great idea. Do you mind saying your name before you tell your story?
My name is Eric. This was based on a really horrible day that we had one day a few years ago. People might have heard about the Boston Marathon bombing. Well, unfortunately, we had friends who were running or right near the finish line, right near where all the bad things happened. And when that happened, we were all on Facebook, checking each other out, making sure everybody's okay, full check-in mode. And that was great. Well, one of the sad parts was there was an officer who had been killed, and he had recently started taking Lindy Hop classes, and some of us knew the officer. Well, that evening, they opened up the doors to where the scene normally gets together for our weekly dance. Everybody came there, just support each other, be there. And it was really uplifting to know everybody treat each other as family. Not just dancers, not 2 minutes, see you later much, but are you okay? We just want to be there to help each other out, really take care of each other. And that's when I knew that it's not, Lindy Hop's not just dance, it's family.
Thank you so much.
Hi, my name's Elaine. You've all been talking about psychological and social healing. Mine is purely medical. A doctor prescribed. I had some pain in my back, and my doctor said that the kind of movement from swing dancing, as I described it, and she knew it, was the best possible thing I could do for my back. And so it's literally doctor prescribed, and I've never had so much fun taking medicine. So.
Thank you, Elaine.
Thank you for sharing. Hi, my name is Hannah. So when I first started swing dancing, my family were pretty skeptical about it. But the more I got into it, I found that it was a wonderful opportunity to open up conversations with particularly my father's side of the family about our family history. I studied history in college. I'm a huge African-American history dork. It's also part of my family, so yeah. I learned through just sharing my experience with dancing that my dad used to love jazz music. He had a career as like a, forget it, rock and roll stuff. But I also would talk with my grandmother, Sylvia, and my great-grandmother, Frances, when she was alive, about the jazz music they loved. And when they would go to all of the clubs and restaurants on Pennsylvania Avenue in West Baltimore, because that was where they lived. And it was really special for me to learn how my own family were connected with Baltimore's history of jazz dance and music, and then that my city actually had an important past with that too. As a young person, I was always concerned that I came from this really poor and unremarkable family and that we didn't really have anything interesting about us. But through learning about jazz dance history and music history, I was able to find that my family and my home are connected to a really important Black American history of art. And that was very healing and powerful for me.
Thank you for sharing, Anna.
It's wonderful. Thank you so much for your contributions, all of you. It's amazing to hear the ways in which dance is healing. And I love that your doctor prescribed swing dancing. That's amazing. We actually have a physiotherapist that's in our swing scene in Cleveland, Ohio. And he talks about how African-based dances are really great for your back because of the way that you connect with the ground and use your, yeah, you get it. So that's wonderful. As I said, we have another question that we'll pose first to our guests and then to you all. The next question is a little bit of the opposite of the first one. What are some hurts, some wounds, some injuries within the swing scene that we should think to address? Yeah. And so, yeah. I know. It's that moment of, I experience this moment often as a college professor. I'm like, okay, so I'm going to ask you a question. And then I'm like, okay, so now I answer the question and just blink, 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 blink.
I mean, I feel like there's definitely ones that we can talk about, but there are people up here that are way more experienced and knowledgeable about it than I feel like someone else should talk about these things.
I mean, everybody's, we want to hear everybody's story. So we're going to talk a little bit about storytelling and the importance of what we just did and hearing from each other's perspective. So if you want to say something, Anthony, feel free.
Yeah, I guess the thing that's really on a lot of folks' minds right now is how essentially whitewashed swing dancing has become. So it's a hurt in the sense that we really want to be able to honor where it came from. And there's a lot of Lindy Hoppers out there that don't know the history of Lindy Hop. And something that I'm working on as a teacher is to be able to include more of the history in the classes and the dance, to be able to honor that and to allow more people to know about where it's coming from. I'm not Black American myself, but I feel like the best I can do is try to, like I said, honor, appreciate, make sure that we know where it's coming from, evolve it, but also know that we're not appropriating, but appreciating, which I think often can be a difficult line to walk. And I am constantly still trying to learn and figure out how to best do that.
Thank you so much. See, I love that, right? I think we should applaud for Anthony.
Well said.
And I also appreciate your bravery in stepping into this, because sometimes mentioning the very obvious thing can be hard.
I do think that, I guess to just add on to what Anthony was saying, that there is a lot of conversation around how do we honor our elders in the community? How do we honor the history of the dance? But something that I'm curious about is now that there has been more recognition, especially with the George Floyd and Black Lives Matter protests of 2020, I'll bet a lot of people in here were pretty active on Facebook and Instagram, but it does make me wonder, and I think a lot of the Black dancers are still wondering how it's going to change our community. You know, where is that evident? Is it evident in just us being up here? Is that enough? How are we making it a better place for the people who are already here, have been saying things and been accustomed to being ignored? You know, it's just a constant, that healing is an ongoing therapy. It's like occupational therapy as opposed to just like a surgery. But also, like Lindy Hop, granted, it was created by teenagers who were like, my brain isn't developed. I'll never die. Faster, faster. But I think, as largely non-competitive and non-professional dancers. Most of us are here because we love to dance and we love the community, and it's about social engagement and dancing together. But there's still this kind of ageism, the prioritizing an athletic body type, not understanding what an athletic body type really is. And then, of course, issues within gender discrimination and the various phobias that come out. I think we're still all working on changing our language to be more inclusive. So, I mean, a lot of Lindy Hop is just a microcosm of greater society. So a lot of the things that we see out in the world affect us here, but because we're just so much more invested in it, it can be that much more painful when it doesn't change, but that much more healing when it does.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
And I think the scene as a whole is going through a huge, for lack of a better word, injury. We've got COVID. We've got 2 years of not having dance. We've got promoters trying to bring back, like, I'm going to put on an event. I have no idea if it's going to be able to happen, and we might lose enormous amounts of money, which we can't afford to lose. And so we have promoters taking these big risks to try to resuscitate the scene, getting it back on its feet. And who knows what the capacity is going to be like? Are only 60% of us from pre-pandemic going to be able to stick through this and be able to come back to it just because of all the things that are going on in our lives? And so in a way, like, we're at a really major, like, broken, we're getting down to the foundation. Well, on the one hand, what's a little bit of something hopeful that we can take out of that is, oh, well, we can build it back stronger. Oh, okay, since we do have to build it back, now we can design and make sure that building back is closer to our ideals.
Yeah, yeah. And Laura wanted to mention a thing you were talking about, 2020, the world looking at George Floyd and then experiencing the greatest civil rights movement we've seen, with different countries having revolutions associated with race, and thinking about this country's history associated with race and the civil rights movement of the 1960s, we move forward, but there are things in our lives that atrophy our progression. And it's really important for us to remember we had this moment in 2020, but interestingly enough, statistics indicate that there was less support for Black Lives Matter at the end of 2020 and at the beginning of 21 than at the beginning of 2020. So we have these moments where we have seeming progression. And so some people might be like, oh, just like with the Obama administration, we're in a post-racial generation. Racism doesn't exist anymore. So as we move forward, I think it's really important for us to remember that we have to continue to have this progress. And that's for all of the things that you were talking about, right? All of the isms, like making sure that we're being inclusive across the board. And so you all did a wonderful job of tackling like racism, classism, ageism, homophobia, all the things. So I'm gonna say a different injury is, I think, our general anxiety as it pertains to participation in these things, as well as participating in dance. I feel like some people are separated from themselves when we are anxious as we approach our music and our dancing. And in Zambia and in my family, not saying that any of these people or places are perfect, but something that I appreciate is this idea of encouragement to change, but simultaneous love and appreciation for where you are. So this nuanced understanding of, yes, we all need to continue to move forward together, but yes, you're also wonderful and perfect as you are today. All right, should we take maybe one or two contributions from our audience?
Yeah.
Hi, so I'm Deborah Huskin, and this is a really powerful question for me, because when George Floyd was murdered, and I started to talk to friends of mine in the Lindy community, and I said, what's it like for you? And one in particular said, I experience that all the time. And I said, I had no idea. Why did you never say anything? And he said, because you're my friend. You know, why would I share that with my friends? You can't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. And what it made me think about And what I try to do now, and what I'd really love to encourage, particularly the white people in the room, to think about is to ask questions. Why are there no black people here? That is such a simple question to ask. If you're in a room full of white people and you look around and there's no black faces, ask why there are no black faces in that room. We just did a Lindy Exchange in Tucson, Arizona. And it's a pretty white community out there, but it's not an exclusively white community by a long shot. And I asked the organizers, how come I'm only seeing white faces in the banner on the webpage? And bless their hearts, they were open to having the conversation with me. They'd never really thought about it. It was a student organized event. They hadn't really thought about it. They were paying attention to school. Once I introduced them to some people in the community, they were very open to expanding what they were doing. So ask, where are all the black people? It's such an important question, especially for us white people.
Thank you, Deborah. Okay, we got some other hands. Yes, please say your name and tell us your story.
Hi, my name is Lee. I use they, them pronouns. It has already been brought up, but there's definitely some strides to be made in terms of being more open to the queer community, being more open to the trans community. I think even just being more open to having folks who are not women leading, or sorry, other way around. I've noticed when I go to dances, I don't frequently get asked to dance by people who don't know what role I am. And I think that's a big part of, like, when I talk to other folks in the community who are also queer and also trans, they find that they don't really get asked to dance because people look at them and they go, I don't know if that person leads or follows, I'll ask someone else, because it's just easier. You, like, when you talked about, like, a banner, like silhouettes of people dancing, it's a person in a suit, a person in a dress, and it can feel very alienating sometimes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lee.
Yes, I'm Lynn. We have left out one category of hurt in the community, which unfortunately is a part of our past, which is sexual harassment and assault. And Rochester, New York has done a really good job of putting together conversations on the subject about boundary setting and consent and all those kinds of things to try to help prevent the issues and get support for people when it happens.
Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Anyone else want to share? All right.
Okay. Thank you. This is an amazing discussion, and I appreciate the themes that are coming out. Curiosity, Deborah, I love that you brought that up, because to our friend in the back there, I know you're not completely in the back, you're in like the middle. What they said was really important. And so there's the question of if who is in the room, right? And why does the room look the way that it does? And can we be a space where everyone is welcome, where people can feel comfortable and not just erased or forgotten because it's easier, right? So speaking from my personal experience as a Black woman, it's really easy to be disregarded. And whenever you add layers of complexity to someone's identity, it's easier to be forgotten. And so we have to be really intentional about making sure that we honor everybody in the room and those who are not in the room. All right, so the next question is, do you think that it's possible for our dance community to experience healing, racial healing, healing related to gender discrimination, healing associated with ableism, ageism, all the things that we're talking about? And so that's a really big question, but it's a do question. I'm a speech pathologist, so a do question is a yes or no question. So do we think that we can engage? Do you think that it's possible for our community to experience healing as we engage in dancing?
Yes.
Thank you, Laura.
Yeah, I think we are making strides. And like many folks have said, is that it's going to always be a work in progress. We're never going to be like, we did it, we're done. But one thing I love about the Lindy Hop community is that it tends to be trailblazing for other dance communities. So for example, when we started changing the name Jack and Jill to Mix and Match, or draw or some of the other names that we have for this type of competition, I think that was a great step just to be able to make it less binary. Whereas other dances like West Coast Swing or Salsa, those types of communities are a little bit further behind, but they're looking to us as a role model, essentially. And there are folks in the West Coast Swing community that are trying to work towards that as well. And it shows them that this is something that can happen. But for example, in that community, you can't have a partnership if you have someone leading that doesn't identify as a male. And you can't win, you can't place in those situations. And then it gets worse from there. So I think these are conversations that are happening in these other communities. And I think it helps when they see communities like ours that are making steps in the right direction.
Wonderful, thank you.
Yeah. And I could give some personal examples for thinking about inclusivity. And I'm from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Oklahoma is a pretty conservative place. And I grew up in a religious community and my whole family's still there. And so I have been able, through my association with the swing dance community, to give more insight to my own home community about what is gender and what isn't it, and what does it mean to be trans, and what kind of relationships. Ultimately, I've mostly been like, these people are people, and it doesn't, it's not, the fears that, or confusion that they might have had because they aren't around as many people who feel safe being open with their identities. I've been able to bridge that gap for my family's sake and for the people who I know who, if they got a chance to get to know people, they would understand too, but they're just not in the same places. So that's been really gratifying on a personal level of being able to be like, okay, I hear you, but I have a friend who is a trans man, and he and his husband are having a grand time, and they're swell people and will help a friend in need. So, you know, things are fine and we should protect them. You know, there's that. And then I've also been able to have conversations about race with white friends in the dance community who, when they first learned the term white privilege, it's hard to hear, but I think because our community as a whole is open to change and is more progressive than a lot of other dance communities, as Anthony mentioned, there are more people around them who are open to those conversations. And so then they feel freer to ask me, like, so is it really that bad? And I'm like, yes, sit down.
Something that was really beautiful to see was in my classes, a couple years ago, I just decided to think, you know what? Everyone's going to lead and follow at least a little bit in every class. There's no reason not to. You can learn so much about dancing by doing the other role for a little bit. There's just no, yeah, everyone's going to do it. And it was really beautiful to see some of the people in the class be like, you know, like, okay, so now let's change roles. And they're like, and like, the first minute is they're looking uncomfortable. And then 5 minutes later, they're just like, to see that, yes, there was a wall there, but that wall was really fragile. It's really hard if you come at it from one angle, but if you come at it from another angle or something like that, it just shattered really quickly. And I know that's, there's a lot of walls that we got. And that one didn't shatter a whole lot of wall. That just shattered that one wall about comfort in taking on a different role than you expected yourself to want to do. But it was like, it was a moment where I saw a wall break relatively quickly and everyone was much happier for that wall having broken down.
Yeah. I was going to say, feel free. Absolutely. And one of the things I love about what you just said, Bobby, and what you said, Laurel, was this idea of exposure to something different. Right? Exposure to a different perspective. I'm going to tell you a thing and it's going to all make sense in a second. So welcome to my circular talking. Bobby and Laura laughing because they know me. I'm part of this program at my university, and this last week, it was kind of perfectly timed. We had this topic of dance as healing for a while, but then I ended up being in this training, and I was like, oh my gosh, I have to share this with Beantown. The training was to develop a truth, racial healing, and transformation campus center. And one of the core principles with this are racial healing circles. And as part of the training, we all had to participate in one. And these were specifically designed by a person named Dr. Gail Christopher. And so we go through this racial healing circle, and the first question that we're asked is like, what was something, and we're gonna answer this question, what's something that made you smile, a memory where you had to smile really big, or that made you smile really big, or laugh? And we broke up into dyads and shared our stories. And so what you're supposed to do in this moment is one person shares a story, the other person is just listening, not saying anything. And then the other person shares their story, and the first person just listens. Then you come back to your group. And then the next question was, when was a time that you encountered your own bias, privilege, and so on? And we did the exact same thing. Shared story, that's it. So in that, you realize there's not any conversation. So we go through that, and that was essentially the racial healing circle. And the question is, at any point in time, did I talk about race in that racial healing circle? I didn't. Because a healing circle provides us with the opportunity to engage in deep listening and to hear other people's stories. And it's a well-researched fact that narratives are impactful. And so that it actually brings us to why we are here today and why we have our podcast. We share stories so that people can hear the stories that otherwise they wouldn't have access to. Because when you get to know someone else, you can see their humanity and you can see yourself in them. It doesn't matter how different they are. We start to see our shared humanity. And so we experience healing through the process of sharing our stories and engaging in deep listening. And so that is my answer as to why we can engage in healing and dancing. But going back to Deborah, we must engage with curiosity and be willing to listen without responding, even if it hurts just a little bit, right? And if we're uncomfortable, to question that discomfort. All right, so our next question is, what are ways in which dancing can aid health and wellness?
I'll go first. So I think one thing that's really great about dancing is that I've always called it free exercise, because you don't really think that you're exercising while you do it. And then 30 minutes later, you're like, why am I so sweaty? Why is it so hard to breathe? And that's something that I know a lot of folks, I'm sure everyone has a general feeling for that as well. Dancing is something you do because you enjoy it, and it also happens to be good for you, maybe good for your lower back. The other thing that I also find that's really helpful about dance is that maybe for some folks, it's like the first like physical activity, right? So maybe you don't do a lot of sports, but then this is the thing that really got you into movement, into using your body athletically. And then from there on, you're like, oh, I really want to get better at dancing. I'm going to keep doing these other activities too. Like maybe I'm going to check out rock climbing, or I'm going to check out biking or running because I want to get better at dancing. So that sort of thing, I think, really builds on top of each other. So I think it's in many ways can be helpful for you.
Yeah, thanks.
So my other passion other than dancing is writing. And talk about a yin-yang balance world. I could stick myself in a room and stare at a computer screen and not interact with humans for a really long time. And then I get a little cross-eyed. And then I go out to a social dance, and all of a sudden, I'm back in. I'm energized and happy and feeling full of life. Like, I remember the first time in the pandemic, after a few years of the pandemic, going to my first social dance, and I was really scared and nervous. I was like, I don't know, how is this going to go? And first off, it was some of the best dancing I've ever felt in my life, because I just literally did not care. I was just so happy to just be back in a space, listening to music and being around other people. And I think I'll never forget that feeling. I went from really kind of down in the dumps to being like, oh my God, and just feeling full of life again, from even if just for a few days. Like,
I also have ADHD, and I'm going to guess that a lot of people in this room do, because I think that not everybody, but
self-medication.
It is, honestly, like all of those, for those who aren't familiar with what ADHD does, it's just in your brain, some of the chemicals that our bodies produce don't get to where they're supposed to go at the same amount, in the amounts that they're supposed to get to. So, you know, serotonin and the other ones.
Dopamine
and the one that starts with O, that's not oxytocin. Thank you.
We have the most well-educated audience. It's amazing.
Yes, I know that there are doctors out there, so feel free.
I remember when I got diagnosed pretty late in life, which is not uncommon for women. I think it was a couple years after I was dancing. I remember feeling like the only time that I felt like a competent adult was when I was on the dance floor or when I was teaching dance. And after I got diagnosed, I was looking up all these ADHD brain chemistry hacks, and it'd be things like pet a dog, go for a walk, hug a person, accomplish a small task. And I was like, dance does all of those things. I get to touch a person. Sometimes there's a dog. I'm accomplishing the task. I'm problem solving in the moment of what is this? What am I doing with my body? And I also get to really enjoy some fantastic music. And it's the social engagement of it all. It's genuinely good for my brain. And I will say that I got into this Facebook group with a couple of other women who I kept talking about. I don't know. When you're newly diagnosed, it's pretty much all you can talk about. When I was like, oh, this happens because of ADHD and dancing's really good for it and blah, 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 blah. Well, since they've all gotten diagnosed with ADHD, because they started to recognize the things that I was talking about in themselves and in their own lives. And so now we're a little ADHD group, but it started with just me. But thanks, dancing.
Sorry, I needed a second. thanks, dancing. I love that. I had surgery last year. And it was supposed to be minimally invasive, ended up being maximally invasive. And before I had surgery, I was just in a lot of pain. I probably wouldn't have been moving much at all last year had I not been asked to teach some African dance classes. So that helped me move in a time when I was in a lot of pain. And then getting ready for Beantown, not that long after I started to recover from surgery was I asked to be a teacher here. So I was like, homegirl's got to get moving. Since the beginning of January, middle of January, I have been walking, walking, walking. The hope of dancing and getting here was what kind of aided my physical recovery, and still in the process of recovery. But thanks, Beantown. All right. Our last question is, remember I said that you will get an opportunity. Oh, Gail, you have a question?
No, I just want to add that motion is the lotion.
Motion is the lotion.
Oh, yeah. Motion is the lotion. So it's like a massage, right? Thank you. Yes. I love that. Thanks. All right. So here's our time to do the question about smiling hard and laughing big. So describe a moment since the pandemic and swing dancing that made you laugh or smile big.
So this one time at another event, I watched this performance that ended in a proposal.
I wonder who that was.
Wait, that should be mine. That's my answer.
Yank.
No, it's like one of those movies where you hear the story from different points of view.
Yeah.
Because what I remember was the betrothed in question coming around from a turn and being like, oh, F expletive, really loudly. Because instead of the next move, she saw Anthony on the ground holding a ring.
It was, what the f-? But she didn't actually say it. I think she just went, and if you listen to the video really carefully, she stops herself right before that. But that was Irina's actual response, because she was actually surprised. She's a little embarrassed about that, but now this is on record.
Millions of views.
That was a beautiful moment. Is that online? Can people watch that?
Yeah, it is online.
It's been shared a bunch.
It's a little crazy. It's on YouTube. It's also on Portugal and Turkey news sites and Colombia. Yeah. I would not expect this weird captions that say, ballroom dancer surprises girlfriend. Come on.
Wasn't it like in the This Good Thing or something like that?
I don't even know.
Yeah. No.
Upworthy.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was not at said event, but I believe, wasn't it live broadcast on the computers? Maybe it wasn't, but I did see the video that night and I was like, wait a second, what's happening? Vocal intonation by Laurel.
Let's see. Jessica, my wife, and I run a group in New York, a performance group, and Julia Loving in New York was putting together the World Lindy Hop Day performances in conjunction with ILHC, and she asked our group to perform. And I just remember we went out there and we threw down and we were so proud of what we did, but it was especially being in that room with the elders of the dance, with so many of the young dancers and our peers, and the fact of all that we'd been through. And just to be able to go there and just do that was one of the most powerful moments I've had. It was filled with so much joy and happiness.
Wonderful.
I don't have any more.
Top it.
I'm just kidding. That's the big one.
Oh, so you are just double dipping into Laurel's happy moment?
Get your own. Always a black woman doing the labor.
Fine, it was your happy moment, whatever.
And we thank you for it.
You should definitely go watch it. It's a fantastic routine, period. They're just such beautiful dancers. And then on top of that, the ending is just so like,
Thank you. One of the funniest things that I really love about this is when it goes out into the internet, then there's just a bunch of people who comment on it, YouTube comments or internet comments. And I would scroll through all of them and read them. And the funniest ones were talking about, so my brother was the one who recorded the video. And in this video, if you watched it, like gets up and he gets right behind me. So you can see like the back of my bald spot right here. And you see basically Irina's reaction from how I perceive it. And there's at least 3 or 4 comments from folks on YouTube that are like, what is this cameraman doing? Or cameraman's trying to smell his hair. Like he's not a battlefield correspondent. I just thought it was hilarious.
It's so funny because it's like they expect professional production when it's your personal
It's my brother. I thought he did a great job.
And he was on a phone, yeah. He did a great job.
Yes, the camera is pointing in the right direction. Yeah. Right? Yeah. So I wrote this question knowing that I really haven't done much dancing in the last 2 years. So this is going to be interesting. I would have to say a moment that made me laugh hard and smile big was actually last night here at Beantown. And it featured our very own Laurel Ryan.
What?
And Christian Frommelt. They were having so much fun just being silly and enjoying the music, enjoying each other. And I was reminded in that moment that while it's good to enjoy getting technically excellent, perfection doesn't ultimately matter. Creativity and artistry are beautiful, and that comes from the essence of who we are. And so I got to see that, and it just helped dispel some of my fears and some of my imposter syndrome. And then I also had a moment with Laurel on the dance floor where we were just being silly, and I was like, oh my goodness, what if people see me being this silly? But I was like, you know what? It doesn't matter. This is great. This is what we're doing in this moment. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. I think we're...
Yeah, perfect time.
Yeah, we're just about out of time. But thank you so much for being an engaged live studio audience.
Kudos to you.
This is so cool.
This is really cool.
So exciting.
I'm used to being in my living room, watching him be in his living room.
With my horrible camera and really bad lighting.
But the thing is, I do really have to say that Bobby is one of the best people that I know, and he does the editing for Integrated Rhythm, and I've had lots of different people who are like, how? I actually had a friend in Ohio who's like, are you flying to New York every week? What's going on? I'm like, no, my bestie's just really good at editing and sound design, so thank you.
Well, thank you, and thank you for being awesome and amazing in every way.
But yeah, so this is Integrated Rhythm. One thing we did not do, though, is sing. We promised the folks some songs.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm staring at you, Pratt.
We production did.
In the description, you said there might be singing.
Okay, so for those who have listened to the podcast before, my late roommate and bestie and I created the music for Integrated Rhythm. I'm just going to ask everybody to join me in singing in your own tune, Integrated Rhythm with Chisomo and Bobby. On the count of three, we're all going to make up a tune. One, two, three.
Integrated Rhythm with Chisomo and Bobby.
Beautiful.
Thank y'all so much. That was amazing. Laurel Ryan, Anthony Chen, thank you so much for being awesome. Chisomo, Bobby. Good night. Thank you for Tony and for Evan on the sound.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Yes. And thank you to Beantown.
Thanks, Beantown.
And also, thank you our elders for whom this would not be possible.